Good evening. This is the second of three from Usher Weiss on marriage. Last week we dealt with one case, and that was a lot of fun. The question of the older sibling versus the younger sibling, who gets precedence, was love incorrect. This week we move on to the Bisley wedding ring, which I'll come back to and explain a little bit shortly. And then next week, God willing, the third case, one which happens from time to time. I had it happen when I was very early on in my rabbinic career, because I didn't realize you have to be careful for this. I knew intellectually, but hadn't thought about it, which is the case in which they timed the wedding wrong, so that the ksuba is spelled out before Shkia, but the chuppah, because things drag out, ends up happening after Shkia. So what do you do? Does that disqualify your ksuba if it was dated with the previous day? That'll be next week, God willing. But this week we have the Bisley wedding ring, or as Rav Asher Weiss calls it in his tshuva on the topic, Kiddushei Tzchok. Kiddushin as a joke, Kiddushin as a game. And this is the sort of story that you hear about from time to time. Presumably it happens in Jewish communities from time to time, but maybe not. Maybe people just make it up. But basically, a case in which young man, young woman are engage in a mock wedding act, and then wonder afterwards, are we in trouble? You know, are we actually married to each other? Because we didn't really think this through carefully. If you take a look at Source Aleph, here's an example of it. Now, I'm giving you the story as it appears in the tshuva. Rav Asher Weiss, his tshuvas appear, some of them appear on a website called tvunah.org, T-V-U-N-A-H.org. And where this shows up there, they gave you an English summary first, which told the story in a way that doesn't match the story here. The way they told the story, it was that there was a play going on. There was some kind of a skit going on in a summer camp. Or in like a B'nai Akiva type educational setting, and guy put a piece of Bisley on the girl's finger as a wedding ring. But that's not what emerges from the tshuva. The tshuva makes it sound much less planned. Take a look at Source Aleph. B'dvar mashashar l'dati, someone asked my opinion, b'migrah mitza'er, in the following painful case, b'madricha bat esrim, girl's 20 years old, she's a madricha, she's a counselor of some kind. Shachad mechanicheha, nar ben 17 shana, hilbish al etzba'a lelo kol dibur mukdam igul bisli. One of her charges, one of the campers of a sort, he's 17 years old, he's not a camper, but somebody who was in her care, he's 17 years old, puts a piece of bisli on her finger. I'm assuming everybody knows what Bisley is, right? We're good with that. The snack food, okay, so they make these rings, and he puts it on his finger without any prior conversation. He has not told her, I'm doing Kiddushin, none of that. V'amarla, but he said at that point, Hare at Mikudeshet Li. Uh-oh. This is Kiddushin. L'kol tzchokam shel chaverav, and all his friends are laughing. The girl now says, I didn't hear him well when he said it. And in her confusion, not knowing what was going on, guy gave her a piece of bisley, which she did what anybody would do. She ate the bisley. She didn't respond to the harayah. She just, you know, said, okay, food. So, when she was later told, you know, there could be an issue here, this might have been kiddushin, she burst out crying. So that's our scenario. We have more sheets. So Ledivrei Shneihem, Rav Asher Weiss says, both in terms of what he says now and what she says now, Baruch Hashem Shalom Yisrael Kol Kavanas Kiddushin, it is clear as day that there was no intent for Kiddushin. Hanar Hitkaven Leitzanut Ba'alma, the guy was just fooling around. And everybody who's standing there knew full well that this was a joke. And she was completely confused by this whole foolish escapade. She had no thought that whatsoever that this was Kiddushin. There was no prior conversation about Kiddushin, not between him and her, not between him and his friends. And the friends were entirely surprised by this foolishness. Hanarasho Elva Marliba. So this girl is now asking, you know, with a bitter heart. She's scared. Imyesh Khashash Kiddushin, maybe to get. Is this really Kiddushin? Do I need a get? Muvan Sha'etim Atal Kabel Gabinar Hapoche Zigrom Lala Shivron Levelu Bizayon Sha'in Lita Erba in Lishaer. And he says, can you imagine that she's gonna actually have to go and get a get from this kid? Forget the experience of the get. She's now going to be a divorcee. That's going to limit who she can marry. It's going to give her a bad name. So yeah, you know, he's describing my Sishaya. He's describing a story. Like I said, these stories come up from time to time, and you never know, was this for real? It used to be Cracker Jacks. The Cracker Jack Prize was what people used to talk about. Is that a thing anymore? Are there Cracker Jacks? Yeah. Are there prizes?
Yeah.
Okay. So Rav Asher Weiss says it's very clear no get is required. That he knows from, you know, there's no get. What he does is he goes through four main arguments for why no get is required. And I want to go through them. They are fascinating for what they teach us and some of the added elements that emerge from the course of this this question. Really, it's two Shilohs in Menachas Asher. The first one where he addresses the issue, and then somebody wrote him a letter challenging him on a couple of points, and then he publishes the next tshuva, which is the response to the questions. So, in order to understand this, in order to approach this, we first have to ask, why is this even a conversation? If everybody involved says it's a joke, so go home. Why do you need to invent, you know, Shilohs? Why do you need to write any responses? And the answer is because the Rama thought this might be an issue. Apparently, Bisley wedding rings were a thing, not only, 21st century, but going back, as we'll see, to the 14th, 15th centuries, we have literature on what's called Kiddush Eschok, Kiddush done as a joke. Here's the Rama in source base. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Ein ha'isha mekudeshes ela l'ritzona. Kiddushin can only happen if the woman is willing. V'anakadesh isha ba'karcha ena mekudeshes, giving her a ring against her will does not work. And then you get the Rama. Rav Moshe Isser is writing in the 16th century. He writes, Amrat chila kadsheni. If a woman says to a man, marry me, Vizara kiddushin letocheka, and he threw something worth a pruta into her lap. Va'amalan, he said to her, Hare amikudesh atli. He says to her, at least the opening of the line. Unclear right here whether he has said Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael or whether we're just using shorthand. Unclear right now. But he says at least the key part of the line. It sounds like the key part of the line. V'niyara v'gadeh tol k'dei dibur l'hashtach v'mena kiddushin. But then she shakes out her clothing. She gets up and she throws away. Oops. She throws away this item that he threw to her. She says, I was kidding. I didn't mean that seriously. So afilu achi havi mikudeshes. The Rama says, guess what? That works. You said kasheni.
Does that have to be eidim?
So there do have to be eidim, because otherwise we don't know what happened, right? We will definitely require eidim. But he says that works. Ein holchin beinyan kiddushin achal undenos v'alchachos hamochichos shelo kivno l'shem kiddushin. I don't care about umdina. Umdina is a very important point. It is at the heart of much of this discussion. Umdina, omed, aleph vav, mem dalid, is a term that we use for estimation. Right? The Mishnah that talks about not tithing omadut with approximation. So, umdina, or umdandat, is when we assess what somebody was thinking. Essentially, it's mind reading. We try to figure out what they were thinking. And the Rama says, when you're dealing with Kiddushin, you can't play umdina games. You can't say, well, yeah, I don't think they were serious. Can't use it. Can't use halchachos, hamochichos, shalokim l'shem kiddushin. You cannot use proofs to say, well, look, she got up and she dumped the item. Clearly, she wasn't serious. She said, marry me. Right? If she didn't mean it, she shouldn't have said it. That's the position of the Rama. The Rama did not make this up. In parentheses, you find his source. Tshuvas Moharam. This is from, this is the Tshuvas Harmonios, Rav Meir HaKoyme Rutenberg. Rav Meir HaKoyme Rutenberg writes the Hagahos Maimonios, commentary to the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, his work of law. But at the end of each section, I don't think it's for all the sections, but for at the end of some of the sections, you find as well Tshuvos of his. Basically, remember, the Rambam is Ashkenaz or Sfard. Sfard. Maharam Rutenberg is Ashkenaz, German. This is not the famous Maharam Rutenberg, it's his Talmud. But they have to have the same acronym and they're from the same place. But he gives you Ashkenazi responses to issues that are relevant to sections in the Mishneh Torah. So at the end of Nashim, at the end of in a comment to Hilchos Ishus specifically, he gives you a tshuva in which he deals with a case like this. Source Gimel. Din Reuven Shkidesh Leia Vizarak LaKidush LaTocheka V'Niyana BeGadeha LaHashlech HaKidush Mimena Tochkede Dibur. That's your case. Reuven gave Kidushin to Leia. He threw her the Kidushin. She dumped it. And she dumped it Tochkede Dibur. Tochkede Dibur means within a few seconds. Such that I would think her action of dumping it reflects what her state of mind really was and is within the period when you can back down from whatever it is that you had committed to. So he writes the following. This is the Tshuvas Maimonios. Ein l'damoso l'hadar minim perakama dekidushin hiskanchili b'mana natalto zarakto l'yamo l'ur l'chodavar ha'aved eina mikudeshes. He says, we have a Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Ches in which we are told, a man says to a woman, I want to marry you with this mana. Mana is a measure of currency. I'm going to give you this coin. I want to marry you with this. He hands it to her. She dumps it in the ocean. She throws it into a fire. She does something else to destroy it. The rule is Eina Mekudeshes. She's not married. So the Hagos, the Tshuvas Maimonios says, don't compare that to the case of marry me and then she dumps it. Why? What's the difference? What's the difference between the two cases? She didn't say anything. Right. Dishani hasam, de'ilo amr le'la me'olam mekudshani lach. In the Gemara in Kiddushin, where we say it's not a valid marriage, that's because she never said, I am betrothed to you, or any such language. Avo benida unzebet, in this case, I bolded it. Kevan dishamu ha'edim, de'hi amr le'la me'ikara ploni b'vikidshani, since the witnesses heard her say, Bovikacheni, come and marry me. Vigam shub b'shas kiddushin, k'shamer b'fnei kulam plonis b'kshem imen l'katsha v'chein esa. And the guy actually says, in his case, the guy says in front of the Edom when he's about to give her the ring, you know, she asked me to marry her and that's what I'm going to do. V'shaska, and she's silent. Av agav debasar denafal asoche kasha ditinu. So even though she threw it out afterwards, Igal amemer demei kara kibul l'shem kiddushin. You could say she initially accepted it as kiddushin. V'chisha ditinu b'achad basar hachim me'adar kahadra bay. And then later she recanted, but it's too late. Came in the kibul kara l'shem kiddushin zula matzah hadra. It's too late. Once you accept it, you accept it. So that's the position of the Tshuvas Maharam Rutenberg. He says if you make a statement that demonstrates that you are serious, that demonstrates your intent, I should say, the fact that your behavior belies that doesn't make a difference. And he goes on, granted that she threw it away immediately, the general rule is that if you back down within a couple of seconds of saying something, then that's considered as though you had never said it in the first place. He says that's true for things in general. Let's say in business. Right? In business, I agreed to a deal and then within a couple of seconds I said, forget it, no deal. So you can't hold me to the deal. I will be kiddushin, but you're dealing with kiddushin. Mishum chumra de'ishas ish kaimel andalav kedibur dami. Because this is a very serious matter. She could be a married woman. That's a major, major issue. If she marries somebody else now inappropriately, we're not willing to go with this toch kedei dibur justification. Further, ve'af agav da'amra b'libi lo haya aluskok lislo tzeitzi imo. Even if she says, I was kidding. Me'om l'nisrat tzeitzi lo aluchucha v'tzlul be'alma. I was just playing a game. He says, as I bolded, that's what's going on in your heart. When the deeds of your when your actions conflict with what you say you were thinking, We don't go by with what you were, what you said you were thinking. We go by with what you did. And finally, the Af Al Gav De Ikal Amemer Danan Sahadi Lo Niskavna El Is Lo Tseitz. And even though you're going to say, but we know she was only kidding. And in general, in cases where we know what somebody was thinking, we do follow that thought. For example, a case of Mavrachas. Mavrachas is a funny case. What does it mean to be, what is Boreach? To run away, right? The bricha, way to flee. The Libramach is to run away. To be Mavriach is to cause something to flee. And what it's talking about is a case in which a woman is getting married, and before she gets married, she writes a document giving all her property to somebody as a gift. We all know what she's doing, right? She doesn't want her husband to have access to it, right? Rather than bother with a prenup, she just says, I'm writing away all of my property to my sister, or whatever it is. Everybody knows she's not serious. And everybody knows that she intends to get it back if the marriage ends. This is not a real gift. So we're willing to accept the idea that we do mind read in certain circumstances. Or it gives you the other case that's a more common case in the Gemara's discussion. The case in which somebody writes away all their assets because they believe either, first the case in Bava Basra, a person who writes away all his assets because he doesn't know he has a child. And then finds out that he had a child. So we reverse the gift because clearly he would have intended for the child to get it. Or the Gemara in Bava Kama, I'm not going to go through all of the cases. But he says, nonetheless, if you look at the bottom of the source and go up three lines, the middle of the line, Gabe Kiddushin, when you're dealing with Kiddushin, Mishum Chumra de Eishes Ish, Lo Nismoch Alom Din Dait Alomar, Lo Haya Beliva Kav Vadai. He says you're dealing with the most serious of matters. If she marries somebody else afterwards inappropriately, that's Yaharg Val Yavor. Right? That's you can't say I know what she was thinking with certainty. He says you can't prove anything. After all, we have a principle that women want to get married, and that she will be happy marrying somebody even if he's not so impressive. Yes, Alan.
If she writes it all out, does it make a difference if it has like an ordinary seal on it or not have a seal on it?
No discussion of writing anything out here. You're talking about the Mavrachas case.
Yeah.
So the Mavrachas case is an interesting one. What would you do that would make it actually be considered a valid gift? What if you write a document that says there's no asmachta here? What if you know, all sorts of other possibilities. We're not going to go into depth in Mavrachas, but yes, there are things that you can do that will cause us to take the transaction seriously. His last line that I quoted here, he then goes off in a different direction to argue that in fact it's not a valid get. It's not a valid marriage. After all, he has a different reason to disqualify the Kiddushin. But the point here, and what the Rama is basing himself on, is that saying I wasn't serious doesn't help.
Does this Kiddushin have witnesses?
Yes. There are witnesses.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the key difference between the Chuvas Maimoni case and the Rama, therefore, as well, and our case is, what's the key difference? You know what it is. You're just not thinking back to it because it was 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago. In those cases, she said, Kacheni. Right? She said, marry me. In our case, there was no prior conversation whatsoever. So that's clearly going to matter. But what Rav Asher Weiss does in his tshuva is to take four different points with which to dynamite the case. And the first one, which is clearly the one that's most important to him, is the idea of umdana. He says, yes, it's true, Chuvas Maimoni is not in love with the idea of reading people's minds. Nonetheless, we have an umdana we can accept here. I gave you a classic case of umdana in Source Dalet, just by way of background on where we do use umdana. It's a classic Bava Basra discussion. It's it's the one that I frankly would have expected to see in the Maharam Rutenberg as well. It's the case in which somebody writes a deathbed gift. We have a halacha in general that a shchiv mira, if someone is already on their deathbed and they say, "Give my property to so and so," That's accepted. They don't have to write it up. It's good enough for them to speak, and it will be honored. Because we don't want them to think, oh no, people aren't going to honor my last wishes. It'll upset him. It could even cause to die sooner. So we honor the person's speech. So that leads to a question in the Gemara. What if somebody is a Shchiv Mera, he is on his deathbed, and he writes such a document, but he does it in writing? So he made it like a regular document. So the question is, when he did that, was he forfeiting the power of Shchiv Mera? In other words, if he wanted to do it as a Shchiv Mera, then just do it verbally. Practical application of that. In the event that a Shchiv Mera, someone on his deathbed, makes a declaration to give the property away, and then he has miraculous recovery, now what? Now what do you do? Well, his property was given away. He can't pay his medical bills. Now what do we do about that? So the answer is, it's obvious that he gave it away thinking he was going to die, and therefore it can be reversed. But that's only if he did it as a Shchiv Mera gift. He wrote this up as a document. Normally, when you write things up in a formal document, you can't back out afterwards and say, that wasn't what I was thinking. Did he effectively change it so that it's no longer Matna Shchiv Mera? That's the question. So Rav in the Gemara in Source Dalid says that by writing it up, what he was doing was making it stronger. He wanted to have the benefits of it being a Shchiv Mera gift and of being a written gift, because there are certain aspects of written gifts that are also stronger than a Shchiv Mera gift. Shmuel says, not so fast, I'm not sure. What do you mean? So the Gemara explains, and I broke it out in bullet points. In the Yeshiva of Rav, they said that he has given it the strength of both types of documents. Meaning that it's like a healthy person's document in the sense that he shouldn't be able to back out, even if he gets better. And it's like the gift of a Shchiv Mera, meaning that if he says, I want my loan to be assigned to so-and-so, it's simply assigned to so-and-so. Shmuel says, I don't know, maybe he only meant it should work with a document, and that creates all sorts of complications. I didn't want to get too far into this case. I've already gone farther into it than I meant to. But the question is fundamentally, do you mind read somebody? And that's really what we're talking about with this Umdana discussion. So Rav Asher Weiss's general point here is, in this first argument, is that it's obvious there was no actual intent for marriage on a few levels. First of all, he points out, and I brought it for you in Source Hay, that they did it without the trappings of a wedding. There was nothing that showed that they were serious. Meaning, in Source Hay, the Achronim have written that if the Kiddushin is done in a way that's not fitting, they didn't have a chuppah, they didn't have Berchas Erisin and Isuin, they didn't have a videographer, right? They didn't do all the things that you need to have a halachic wedding. So he says, that shows they didn't mean it as Kiddushin. Obviously, the videographer is a joke. I hope people got that. But they wouldn't have done the kiddushin in the wrong way without a chuppah and so on. That doesn't make any sense. There's no ksuba. There's no nothing. So he says, That's number one. Anam lechora tema lomar kain. The bechalani dugmos lechora lomayrik shem ondim tachas chupasam varav mevarach berch brachos kedash al tov. He says the truth of the matter is, this isn't such a strong argument, because in all the cases that were discussed historically of people who accidentally got married, those were all cases in which you didn't have a chuppah and you didn't have a masada kiddushin and all of that, and no one ever said, well, let's throw it out because they didn't have the trappings of a wedding. Nonetheless, he says, I believe that this is worth considering, the fact that they did it without the trappings of a wedding. That's number one. Number two, still within the Umdana argument, he says, there is no reason for us to think that they were serious. These are a bunch of kids playing games. That's all it ever was. And he says, the Chazon Ish adopts this view. Take a look at Source Vav. The Chazon Ish is commenting on this Maharam Rutenberg, this Rav Meir HaKoyim Rutenberg, who said that that we don't follow Umdana in a marriage case. He says, V'nira delav klala kail shein Umdana mo'elas be'ishas ish. He wasn't giving you a general rule that you can never mind read in a marriage discussion. Lo b'gemara, lo beis din shel ma'aram. He says there was never any such takana, right? They established in a beis din that we won't read minds. It's just not true. Ayin b'rashba b'shem Tosfos raya d'mahani gilui daita af beget. He says the Rashba quotes Tosfos to show that in fact we do accept gilui das, that people's actions demonstrate what they are thinking. So what did the ma'aram really mean? What he meant was, we're not going to go based on a personal assessment of what's going on. To permit a married woman. To say that, I apologize, I stapled it on the wrong side. To say that there is a clear-cut basis to read her mind. Because who could really say, I know that for a fact, I can guarantee that that's what's going on? Hunis Ratza, Shane Choshesh, he agreed to it because he has no concerns, he's happy to be married to her. And she's very happy because she liked to be married. But he says, if you could really prove that it's not a valid kiddush, that there was no intent, if you could have a clear-cut assessment that there was no seriousness, then I would accept that and say there's no kiddush. So the Chazon Ish himself says we're reading the Ma'aram wrong. The Ma'aram did not mean to say that you can never mind read on a marriage issue. You just need to be really, really, really sure. That's his second way that he says this. His third way that he says this is to say that the umdana is clear to the witnesses themselves. The witnesses in this whole thing know that it's not so. Here in Sor Zion, you get a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein on a different case of, again, you know, people playing a game and ending up possibly married. And the Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he deals with it in Sor Zion, makes this point. He says the Mashkasav Shem B'tshuva, when the tshuva is Maimonu, wrote Delonismo Chalom Den Daita, that we don't rely on mind reading. Mishum Deikanami Lemeimar Ita Sabacholu Nechala, because you could say she's happy being married. Hukumufurasham Dim Haya Hadavar Borur Vanan Sahadi Shavadai Loniskavna Likidushin Loaya Zed Ram Shabalev. He says no. If it's really clear, and we are witnesses, that she never intended it, then that's not called something she's thinking in her heart. It's as though she had expressed that this is not kiddushin.
It would be a problem if two people walked by, didn't know this was a joke going on, they hear this, culture of Aden, would it be an issue?
Potentially. And his wording is anan sahadi, which is not so much a statement about technical witnesses as it is, we all are witnesses. We all know. In which case, if I have 10 people who were standing there at the time and saw the buildup and knew it was a joke, then even if two people come by and clearly had no frame of reference and said, we just witnessed a wedding, we're not going to listen to them. I think his being more broad with the Anan Sahadi.
Well, I mean, you could have a million witnesses that think they saw something. If she didn't agree, she knows, right?
It's not. No, because she is making a statement about herself.
Right, but she has to agree.
To her own benefit. At the time, she accepted the ring and she ate it. You missed the beginning.
No, I saw it. But she said she didn't hear.
Yeah, but she didn't hear his words. She says, I didn't hear.
So, I mean, if we know.
We all heard him.
Okay, so fine, okay. So we're questioning her own testimony.
Correct. Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Because if we know what she meant, it doesn't matter what other people think they saw.
Correct.
How about if we see this on TV, like a lot of times on sets, you know?
Yes.
Jewish weddings.
Right. That's why I didn't like the way it was presented on that website, where they presented it as though this had been part of a skit in camp. If it's part of a skit in camp, I think you have a very clear umdinah. You know, I don't think there's even any reason to have a discussion at that point. I agree with you. This was not, and the way the question is worded in the tshuva, this was not a skit. This was just something that happened, and she had no clue what was going on. But take a look at Ches. I mentioned that he had a follow-up tshuva because someone asked him a question. Someone said to him, I don't understand. We have generation after generation of tshuvos on these cases and ways to get out of saying that they're married. And no one ever made this argument of, They're not serious. We know they're not serious. If this is really a valid way to do it, to say that when Rav Meir Rotenberg doesn't like the idea of umdana, that's only a regular umdana, but he's willing to accept when we all know what's going on, why didn't all of them say that and be done with it? Were they paid by the word? Like, why didn't we just throw out all of those cases all along? That's what the person asked Rav Asher Weiss. Look at his response, the fascinating response. Source Ches. He says, maybe the generations are different. He says, the fact that our predecessors did not record this idea to be lenient. You know what? I don't know what life was like for them in their cities, in their times. Maybe it was true that in their day it was more likely that they were serious. Each judge has to assess in his own time. This is like, you asked me about him before. This is the sort of comment that he's wanting to make. He says, it's clear as day, in our day, nobody is serious in such a case. The point that I would make in favor of his argument is, in those days, you had younger marriage, right? In other words, the idea that a 20-year-old is marrying a 17-year-old, right, is you know, I mean, the 17-year-old part certainly. 20-year-old depends on which part of the city you live in, but the 17-year-old, I think, is fairly unusual. As opposed to in their day, where in fact that could, you know, that was late.
Nobody would talk to yourself.
Right, and the videographer, the photographer, and so on. But it's an interesting point that he suggests here that in different eras you may look at this differently. But
well,
that's
different countries.
Like yeah.
In Israel, the military, people get married.
Right. Correct.
What's interesting is he didn't say the boys and girls didn't used to hang out together at all. He didn't go there.
Well, apparently that's not true, because then they wouldn't have ever had these questions. The questions would have been, a man threw a ring to another man and said, I want to marry your daughter. And that would have been the case. You're laughing, but that actually happens. I mean, we dealt with that case last week. We talked about that case last week at one point. In the Lovan discussion. But the other pieces of this, to his argument that it's umdana, and again, he brings umdana in six different ways. But he also says the elements involved show... The elements that would have shown that they were serious are lacking. He notes, as we noted, that in the tshuva of the Jewish Maimoni, the girl said, Kansheni, she said, marry me. And the Panim Me'iros in, I brought him here, Rameir Eisenstadt, in Source Tess, says, that's a critical part of this conversation. Hama'ayin Shum. If you look at the Shuas Maimini, Yerushim Ma'iri Deshamu Edim Di'i Amrlome Kara Ploni Bova Kacheni. The witnesses heard her say, you, come here and give me Kiddushin. The Gambish asked Kiddushin Omar, Ploni's Bikshami Mena Vakach Vachinasa. And they heard him say at the time of the Kiddushin, she asked me to do this and I'm going to. Vishaska, and she was silent. That's a critical part of the case, according to the Panim and Me'iros, who says, in the case he's dealing with, because again, these things happened, he says, in our case, no one ever said anything, not him and not her. The case that he's dealing with, they're playing some kind of a game involving nuts. I don't know if it's like a dreidel type of a game or something, but he lost or whatever and had to give her the nuts, and he did it and said, Harayat. So, again, there's no context for it, and therefore he says, I don't think that that's Kiddushin in the least. That's the position of the Panim Me'iros. Granted, he notes, the Chasam Sofer says not so fast. Chasam Sofer in Source Yud says not so fast. In the interest of time, I'm going to say this outside of the Chasam Sofer, but you can see it there inside. He says the only reason why Kacheni is needed to demonstrate intent is because in that case, in the Chuvas Maimoni case, she dumped the Kiddushin right after it was given to her. So since she drops it, without saying Kacheni, it's clear that she has no intent for it. In our case, she didn't dump it. She ate it. So therefore, you can make the argument that Kadsheni is not necessarily needed. He acknowledges that, and he says, you're right, but I have other reasons to be Megill, including, he makes the comment in where was it? Was it in Yud Aleph? No, it's not in Yud Aleph. He makes the comment, I didn't bring it on the sheet, that there was no rabbi. And he says, uninformed people tend to assume you need a rabbi in order for there to be a wedding. So therefore, the lack of a rabbi is demonstration that they didn't take it seriously. And then his last note is that here, the guy says, I didn't really mean it. And that's what I brought you in Yud Aleph. He says, the guy himself says he had no intent. And it's true that she was Maimon, he says, I don't believe her. Because she may want to get married, even if it's to some 17-year-old. He's 17. Even if it's true that the Shua's Maimonides says that she may want to get married to the guy, even if he's not worthy, that's not going to apply for him. So point number one that he makes is, Umdana is real in the event that you're really, really sure. And even though the Shua's Maimony didn't accept it, he would accept a real Umdana, like the argument of the Chazon Ish. And the real Umdana that we have is that the setting isn't serious, you don't have a chuppah, it's clear, Anan Sahadi, everybody can see it. She didn't say Kadsheni, there's no rabbi, he says he had no intent. So that's his, that you get the sense as you read the tshuva, but that's his real point. However, he brings in three other reasons to say this is nothing. Nekuda Beis, the second point, which he builds on two bases, is that there's no proper edus. There's no proper testimony here. They heard him say, Haraya Mekudesh et Li. They didn't hear him say, Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. Or B'tabad Zu, for that matter. So take a look at source Yud Beis. The Hagos Mordechai on Gittin quotes Rabbeinu Nasan. Ma'ora echad she'ira, source Yud Beis. Ma'ora echad she'ira. The following thing happened. Shebochor echad ayim edaber mihudis achas. Young man talking to a woman. La'alvos lo mo'za kereshel kesef. He wants her to lend him money. Putting the money down on some silver keres. Keres, like krasav, if you've been reading the parashiyos carefully, was Shnai Mikra. So a keres is a hook of some kind. He wants her to put the money down on this surface, which is made of silver. But Herulah keres, he shows her the keres. And he said to her, Tirti lihiskadesh bo'neulach. If I would give this to you, would you accept that as kiddushin? Hitchil l'sachek, she starts joking. She starts laughing. Chazer ba'omer, he says to her, Harei ulach l'shem kiddushin. This is yours as kiddushin. Mamash bazeh lashon omer la, saying exactly that. V'lo omer la harei mekudesh es li bazeh keres. He didn't say b'tabad zu, so to speak, with this keres. So now what happens? So he says, V'hine hachacham Rabbeinu Nasan mara balahet teira. Rabbeinu Nasan says, mutter. V'tavas lapashtei de gemara, based on the gemara, in kiddushin. What's the gemara? Shmuel said, the kiddushin nasan la kesef o shave kesef. If he gives her money or its equivalent, va'amar la harei mekudeshet harei meureset harei zo mekudeshet. He says harei mekudeshet. That's good enough. Uparach, and then they ask, lema kesever Shmuel yadayim she'en mochichos haven yadayim. Does that mean that Shmuel believes that partial speech that doesn't demonstrate what he fully meant, because you didn't say the rest of the sentence, that's valid? We are allowed to mind read the rest of the sentence. And the Gemara's answer is, Hakam Mayaskina Da'amar Li. That's where he said Li. Rabbeinu Nasan's position is, you have to say, Hare At Mikudeshet Li. You need to say that. And then the Mordechai himself goes on and says, I don't agree. I don't agree at all. I don't think that's actually necessary to say that much. The Chasam Sofer, writing on this in Yud Gimel, says Rabbeinu Nasan doesn't just think you need to say Li. You need to say more than that. You need to say, as I put in bold, V'chevedzeh, with this item. That's what Rabbeinu Nasan means. Now, again, the Mordechai and the Chasam Sofer disagree with Rabbeinu Nasan. They don't think that he's correct. They don't think you need to hear the whole rest of the sentence, or even that you need to say the rest of the sentence. Saying Haraya Mekudeshet may be enough. However, Rav Asher Weiss quotes this and says, aha, That's another piece. Since you need to say, at least, Harayat Kodesh Ali B'Tabadzu, and all they had him say, all they heard him say in our case was, Haray, what was the language? Harayat Kodesh Ali, you're missing part of the sentence. You're missing Eidus. That's number one. Number two, he says, in source Yadam, you didn't have Kasher Eidim anyway. He says, "V'lechora ain kan Eidim klal." What witnesses do you have anyway? The habanos halo psulos le'edus. The girls are disqualified. V'rak nar echad ra v'shama. With only one guy who actually heard and saw what happened. Sharanar m'kinir lo shamu klal as shamar anar apochef, and the rest of them didn't hear it. So he says, "There's no Eidus."
Probably all drinking.
maybe afterwards. Point number three is there was no act of Kiddushin. And this is a fun discussion I gave Shia earlier this year on the question of what constitutes a pruta for Kiddushin. So the standard for what constitutes a pruta is it has to be the equivalent of half of a barley kernel of silver. If you can imagine a tiny little barley kernel, small, right? Half of that volume of silver. As I did the math, if I did the math correctly, it's about 4 cents or so Canadian, the give or take. A little bit of variation, but not a whole lot. Varies more based on the Canadian dollar fluctuating than on silver fluctuating. But that's basically what it's worth. So he argues you didn't have a pruta's worth here. Because the piece of bisli isn't worth a pruta. Now, here's where things get fun. This argument that it's not really worth a pruta. Because you can do the math. How much does bisli go for?
6 cents.
Well, depends. You're at no frills, I'm guessing. Let's say...
So 8 or 9 cents? But you still have to count each one.
How many bisli pieces do you have in a bag?
50.
Well, this is in Israel. It's even cheaper.
No, it's not. 50. 40 is probably more expensive.
Yeah.
It's less than 2 cents.
So he actually does the math and comes out with the idea that it's worth more than a pruta. A bisli ring is actually worth more than a pruta if you do the math that way.
Well, if you only count
but he
four
says rings. That's the wrong way to do the math. Take a look. This is brilliant. Take a look at Sar Tezvav. He's right. Once you read it, you're going to realize. This is why he's Rav Asher Weiss and I'm not. He says, V'hine, l'chora yesh kan sad nosaf l'pakpek v'kidushin eile. Here's another way to take apart this kidushin. D'alo kitsha b'igul shal bisli v'lechora ein zeh shava pruta klal. He gave her a bisli ring. That's not shava pruta. Umalas kvo toras so kosev. He says, Your Honor, who wrote the question to him, you wrote, d'mechir chavilat bisli ole chamisha shach. You say that bisli, a package of bisli, costs 5 shekels. Ubisfirosha kama chavilot, and when you count a bunch of these packages, nimtashish b'chavila b'erach arba'im igulim ka'ela. You have about 40 rings in the packages. It's like the pomegranates. You have to figure out how many seeds they have inside by counting a bunch of them. V'nimtashikol igul shava yose me'eser agorot. So each ring is worth more than 10 agorot. Based on the price of silver today, that's more than 2 pruta per ring. I'm not going to challenge him on it. That's what he says it's worth. Fine. But he says, in my humble opinion, you're doing the math wrong. Even if a package is worth 5 shekel, you're paying for the fact that the package is sealed and preserving the bisli rings for a period of time. A piece of bisli in someone's hand is not worth anything. You can't sell it. You put your bisli ring on eBay. What are you going to get for it? It's worth less than a pruta. In other words, when you pay for a bag of potato chips, you're paying for the added value of sealed storage of the bag.
But you can say the same thing by silver barley, right? A piece of silver, you can pay 4 cents for it.
Yeah.
So good. We're going to come back to that. Hang in there. That's coming right now. That's the next point. The questioner challenges him on this and says that doesn't make any sense. The people didn't sell half saora. Like Mikey asks, people didn't sell half saora amounts of silver back. back in the day. So look at his response in Tet Zion. I prefer his second piece of the response. He writes two pieces. I like his second one more than his first. But he says, Be'emes, Ein l'damos erech ha-kesef l'erech d'var meichol kolshu. He says, you can't compare the value of silver to the value of some minimal piece of food. Hamatchus, he says, metal, hamatchus ha-yikarot, precious metal, v'ha-kesef b'chlalon, which includes silver, Yeshlam erech atzmi hataloy b'mishkal bilvad. They have an inherent value based on their weight. Avshein derech lamalchuan v'lischor bahem ele nirchidot mishkal mesuyamot. Even if you would not traffic in such tiny amounts, nonetheless, we say that they, you know, if you had an ounce of this, it would be worth this. And if we even have half an ounce, then it's worth half of that. That's the way they trade in metal. That's how they value metals. Mashenki divrei meichel, as opposed to food. Shebahem alakuch mishalem gamala arizava atifa. You're paying for the packaging, which keeps it fresh and so on. That's point one. But then point two, point two is the real answer, I think. Va'od dimishkal chatzi sa'or kasef shir hu shenik ba'yideh ga'onim bismanayem. He says, this weight, or not weight, volume of half of a barley kernel of silver was a shear that the Gaonim established. The Rambam quotes it from the Gaonim to say that that's what a pruta is. It's half a barley kernel of silver. It had nothing to do with whether anybody would buy it or sell it. They were talking about the volume of silver and whatever it is worth. He says, even if you were to tell me that somebody who wanted to sell this tiny fragment of silver would get less than that, it doesn't matter. This is the amount. That's what we're talking about. That's point number one here, to say it's not worth a pruta. But there's a problem. In the discussions about pruta, the Sma, commenting on the Shulchan Aruch Loshen Mishpat, makes a remarkable comment. He says, prutas aren't worth what they used to be. He says, there's been inflation. You can't buy with a pruta anything. Right? Today, in Canada, it wouldn't even be legal currency. Right? Where they dropped the penny. Penny is legal currency, but you know what I mean. But in Source Yud Zayin, I brought you the position of the Sma. The Sma says, because at this point, produce costs us a lot more, and the pruta can't buy anything, the pruta is no longer the standard for kiddushin. It's not true. You give someone a pruta, it doesn't count. That's his. He tells you, pruta, I think, based on our coins, is 1/8 of a pfennig, and you're not getting anything for 1/8 of a pfennig. Right? A pfennig is a penny. So he says it doesn't work. That's the position of the Sma. Now, the truth of the matter is, as I brought you from the Nachla Shiva in Suras Yirches, the most poskim are not concerned for the position of the Sma. Because they say, are you now going to tell me that pruta is really out as a shear? So what would happen if it was the other way around? What if you had deflation? And now a pruta could buy a lot. And half a pruta could buy a lot. So now you're going to say half a pruta is your standard? That's not the way it works. The truth of the matter is, though, that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, I brought you in Source Yates, says that we are somewhat concerned for the position of the Sma. But Rav Asher Weiss is very willing to use the Sma here. So again, his first argument was everybody knows they weren't serious, and even the Shuvah's Maimon knows they weren't serious. His second argument is there is no Eidus. Because no one heard him say the full sentence, or even betabazu, and because he didn't have kosher edim. And then his third point is there's no act of kiddushin because the bisli ring isn't worth a pruta. Number one, and number two, you have the position of the Sma that even if it's worth a pruta isn't worth a pruta. It can't do anything, and therefore it doesn't count. His fourth and last point is, this whole Ramah is a chumrah, and therefore we are lenient. And he braces himself on Rav Moshe and others. Take a look at Source Chaf. He mentions a few poskim. I brought you the piece from Igros Moshe, where Rav Moshe is dealing with a kedusha schok case, and Rav Moshe says yesh lidon bazeh. Deal with this case. The case, the kid gave her the ring, and then quickly grabbed it back. So he says, the fact that he grabbed it back may count as a demonstration that he wasn't serious. Shemashma beramba, the uchacha gedola b'had the amra katsheni v'zarak lakidushin tochei kav v'niyara begadeh toki tiba lahashcha kidushin. Right? Ve'omera shalom kivna el l'schok. He says, after all, when she says katsheni and he throws her the kidushin and then she dumps it, right? We say that that is an important act in terms of demonstrating what she was thinking, and the Rama wrote there that afilu achi havia mekudeshes, even still she is mekudeshes. Vein ocha min kedushin, we don't follow umdina. Alma de tofe zel hochacha ach shein hochim bekedushin achra umdinas velchachos. He says, we see from here that her act of dumping the ring would have been a valid umdina, except we don't follow umdinos in general. So Ramosha says, that's a chumrah, that idea. And therefore, argues Rav Asher Weiss, if you have reasons that you can use to argue against adopting the chumrah, we're going to do so. So Rav Asher Weiss is willing to reject the idea that this is actually a valid kiddushin for those reasons. He does have a concluding paragraph in which he says, don't let your kids run around like this. This is terrible that that's the state of chinuch today, that kids think this is an okay thing to do. But rather than bring you his closing paragraph on it, I wanted to bring you Zalman Chaim Goldberg on umdina, in terms of when you may and when you may not use umdina. This is a fascinating point which he discusses in an article. His article in context appeared in a fascinating, fascinating pamphlet. The pamphlet was called Kuntres Dam Reyecha. It's on issues of abuse and following up on allegations of abuse of children. And he's addressing the question of, where I have reason to believe that somebody is guilty, is that really sufficient for me to act on it? What kind of evidence do I need in order to be able to follow up and act? And he argues that you'll see. He clarifies when you're able to use umdina, and he sets it up by quoting you two passages of Gemara. First one is a classic, source Chafal, Shvuos Lamed Daled, Rabbi Shimon ben Shetach. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Shetach, Ere ben Nechama im Lora Isi Echad Sheras Achar Chaveira Lechurva. He's talking about the issue of punishing somebody in a Beis Din based on our assessment of from circumstantial evidence that he committed a crime. So the case, Rav Shimon ben Shetach says, I saw somebody pursuing somebody else into a ruin. V'ratzti acharav, and I ran after him. Matzasi sayif biyado, and I saw the pursuer was holding a sword. V'dam metaftev, and there's blood dripping from the sword. V'harug mefarper, and the victim was still shaking from having been murdered. It just happened. Amartilo, and I said to him, Russia, wicked one, mi har golazeh, o ani olata. Who killed him? Was it you or was it me? Avama esa. Shane Damok Master Biyadi, but I can't do anything about it. Your blood is not given to me. Ishai Amra Tara Pishnaim Aidim Ushlosha Aidim Yumasames. The Torah requires two or three witnesses. You don't have any witnesses. Because even I, who saw you run after him, didn't see you kill him. Ela Hamakom Yifra Mimcha. But God is going to zap. Said that, sure enough, a snake came along, bit the guy, and he died. But the point is, you're not willing to use umdina. Right, the Rambam even brings this in Sefer HaMitzvos, in Lo Sase Reish Tzadi on Renakiva Tzadik Al Taharo. The Rambam says we don't use circumstantial evidence, even where we can make an assessment and say, I'm sure that's what happened. However, you have the Gemara in Makos in Source Chaf Beis dealing with also a life and death issue. Mishnah says, Hasone Eino Gola. If somebody hates somebody else and kills him accidentally, he doesn't go to the Ir Miklat. Why? Because we assume it was really intentional. We just don't have witnesses to prove it. Rabbi Yossi Omer Asone Nerag Mneshu Kamur. Rabbi Yossi says no. If he hates him, we're going to execute him. Forget letting him go, walking around. He's going to get executed. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Omer Asone Nerag. Balo Astrube. What do you mean? There was no warning. How could you execute on that basis? Masnisin Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda. The answer is, this mission is like the view of Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda, who said, Chaver eino tzarich hasra'a. A chaver does not require a warning. Somebody who is educated, who knows the laws, who's trained in the laws, doesn't need to be warned. Because the purpose of a warning is only to figure out who was doing it intentionally and who was doing it accidentally. But when you know he's doing it intentionally, you don't need the warning. So that means you are willing to rely on Umdana. You're assessing whether he knew what he was doing or not. That's a whole other discussion. Good question, but not for right now. The point here is, you're willing to say here that we do rely on Umdana, but in Shavuos, you say you can't rely on Umdana. So which is it? So based on a Ma'arik, Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg answers that, and it's, I brought you just like a one-liner in Chav Gimel, he says there's a difference between using an Umdana to figure out what happened versus using an Umdana to figure out why it happened, what people were thinking. When it comes to what happened, so we have other ways to find out what happened. There's a possibility of witnesses. People can see something and they can assess. So that's our preferred mechanism. And if you, for whatever reason, didn't have witnesses, too bad. That's the way it goes. However, you can't use witnesses to figure out what someone was thinking. The only thing you can do with witnesses is to try to assess it based on what was in the person's head. And very often, the verdict in a case depends on figuring out what was in somebody's head. Because I don't know whether it was intentional or accidental. I don't know whether they meant it for Kiddushin, didn't mean it for Kiddushin. I don't know whether they were serious or not serious. So all you have is Umdana. So Zalman Chaim's point is that mind reading is a legitimate halachic mechanism when it comes to cases that hinge on what was the person thinking. You may need to go to great lengths to prove you're right, especially in an Eishes Ish case. You need Umdana Demuchach. It has to be clear cut, right? And that's the argument that Rav Asher Weiss is making here, that it is clear cut. But you can't tell me, you can't just say, as the Maharam Rutenberg seems to be saying, we just don't do Umdana in such cases. It's just not true. You have to be able to assess what a person's seriousness was. So I brought that just to flesh out the Umdana issue altogether. But that's the discussion about the Bisley wedding ring. Come back next week, God willing, to discuss the wedding issue of where the ksuba was written and was signed by the witnesses before Shkia, and then the chuppah ran long, the badekin ran long, and now they're going to get married after Shkia. What do you do? Shkoyach.